don't frighten us by telling us the facts, 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 the facts. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as war itself. We must apply ourselves to our task.
For 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on June 10th, 2018 for release on June 19th and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Nate and Rachel join me to discuss plastic pollution in the world's oceans and waterways. That's all coming up on Arsenal for Democracy. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me again in studio this week is Nate. Hey, Nate.
Hey, Bill.
And joining us on the line from Idaho again is Rachel. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Bill.
So again, half episode this week, as we're doing all the rest of this summer. This episode, we're going to be talking about plastics, especially in our oceans and waterways. There's been a lot of discussion about this. I've been seeing all over social media, especially with a big recent report from the United Nations and various other organizations in concert trying to promote this information about this. Obviously, there's like tons of different angles you can talk about on plastics. So we won't be covering all of them, but we'll get to some of them. Nate, where do we begin on this topic?
Right. So there was a UN study published for World Environment Day that suggests that plastic pollution is a extremely serious and increasingly serious concern across the globe, sort of showing a graph here with a sharp increase ever going back to about 1980. And the projections are not good because obviously plastic can take thousands of years to decompose and then contaminate all sorts of other things. I do want to look at this Washington Post article from about a French marathon swimmer, Benoît Lecomte. He's going to do a 6-month-long attempt to swim across the Pacific Ocean. But one thing he's having to deal with is plastic smog, which is sort of like a haze of billions of pieces of microplastic. So yeah, they've broken down from larger plastic items. And apparently the largest accumulation of plastic smog in the Pacific is the size of Germany, France, and Britain combined. And he's going to have to swim right through it. So that's a pretty sizable area, considering, the Pacific is huge, but at the same time, there are reports of like islands where like no one's been to really, but they're still covered with plastic just because it washes ashore, and you know, you have all these plastic bags. So, and they can, you know, there's recent reports of all sorts of the different types of effects it can have on animal life, whether it's, you know, seals or birds, or a whale was killed in southern Thailand after eating plastic rubbish and vomiting out several plastic bags. The UN estimates the global damage to marine ecosystems to be at least $13 billion annually. Going into this UN report that I read through, it seems like the main issue is single-use plastics. So, that can be anything from plastic bag that you get from the supermarket or whatever, different plastic containers, things like straws. That's become a relatively big focus recently, to the point where, you know, I feel kind of bad, like even taking a straw for like an iced coffee or something. It's pretty easy to just take up the top off and just sip. You know, you don't really need a straw. Apparently straws, I think, were invented so like you didn't warm, or you didn't like chip the ice for like certain kinds of cocktails. Like, we don't really need straws if you think about it.
And I guess a lot of them used to be made out of wood fiber, and yeah, so people are, like, moving back in that direction.
Yeah, you could do a wood straw. It's going to do the same thing. So, yeah, and basically they found that it really seems like these increasingly common different packaging materials is a huge issue. So they talk about in the report how there used to be maybe you get, your toothpaste in a metal tube back in the day, and now it's like a plastic tube. Maybe you would get your various toiletries in like a paper bag or like a box or whatever, but now it's plastic or like a film. So it just, we have all this petroleum and we're just using it to build more and more plastics. Packaging apparently is 36% of all plastics designed for immediate disposal. And yeah, basically the world produces more than 40 million tons of plastics every year. And a lot of this is increasingly in sort of these disposable, rip it open, throw it away immediately. And a lot of it is going into the environment. Some of it is occasionally burned, which can also have some pretty harmful effects. And I feel like they found that of these single-use plastics, like only like 2% is effectively recycled. So, that creates a situation where a lot of it is going out into the environment. By 2050, an estimated 99% of seabirds will have ingested plastic. Marine litter harms over 600 marine species. 15% of species affected by indigestion and entanglement from marine litter are endangered. They're finding different types of microplastics in mussels and all sorts of sea life and things like that. So that's a concern when you're eating seafood. There have been, and we'll go into some of the case studies, but there apparently even as far back in 1988, there was a poor drainage resulted from plastic bag litter clogging drains contributed to devastating floods in Bangladesh, as 2/3 of the country was submerged. So Bangladesh is kind of, ground zero for climate change and the dangers of that. And so, we can see how plastic bags can exacerbate that, as well as other things like styrofoam products. And, these things do not break down in the environment. And, we need to move as fast as possible to different types of actual biodegradable materials that, that can be reused and also that will actually break down in the environment instead of, leaving it there forever, basically.
Just to put a few more statistics into play here. So plastic was first invented in the 1860s and developed for industry in the 1920s, because there was a while where they had sort of figured out how to make it but weren't sure what to do with it. But the plastic production really takes off in the 1940s, becomes one of the fastest growing global industries. According to the World Watch Institute, in 2013, 299 million tons of new plastics were produced. And global production of plastic has been rising continuously for a 50-year period. Basically had started, back in 1950, it was only 1.7 million tons being produced annually worldwide. But it's, it's come to replace all sorts of things, as Nate was talking about a little bit, like, things that used to be glass or metal, like now that's plastic. Of course, it's mostly coming from like oil, natural gas, other hydrocarbons like that, although there's been some attempts to make plastic out of like corn or sugarcane and so forth. But 4% of all petroleum consumed worldwide each year is used just to make plastic. Another 4% is used to power the plastic manufacturing processes. So 8% of the petroleum being used each year is related to the plastics industry. And the average person living in North America or Western Europe consumes 100 kilograms or 220 pounds of plastic each year, mostly in the form of packaging. In Asia, the average use is still only 1/5 of that level, but is expected to grow rapidly as these economies expand. There has been some like environmental improvements in some areas related to plastics, for example, that plastics improve transportation efficiency, reduce the packaging and product mass compared to those metal and glass things. So like, they were saving on fuel used for transportation, but like the trade-off there is probably not favorable. A lot of vehicles today are also increasingly made out of plastics, as opposed to metal and other things like that, where they used to be. you know, previously China had been taking in more than half of worldwide waste plastic each year for disposal, reuse, or incidental use, etc. And, you know, there was a huge volume of plastic being shipped from the United States, Japan, even Europe, that was like, oh, you put it in the recycle bin. Well, it's actually going to China. There were and a few other countries in the area that had low environmental protection controls and things like that. But then, so a lot of that was just ending up like getting burned or in the ocean or whatever, like it wasn't really being recycled. And then China began cracking down on that. And then China stopped taking in a lot of the plastic in the last year or so, I think. And so that has sort of created a more of a crisis as well. So those are just some of the statistics related to plastic use. A lot of it, again, is being, you know, just thrown out, put in landfills, dumped in the ocean, incinerated, which is also bad, as opposed to being recycled. And worth noting that the recycling, the plastic recycling industry kind of took a big dive, especially in the United States in the last, you know, two or so years, because it's like any of these other commodities. The commodity price has to be really high in order for it to be worthwhile economically to be recycling this stuff if you're just looking at it on a purely like market-based thing without a lot of incentives or command and control ordering people to do these plastic recyclings. So with the commodity prices dropping back down again, it is no longer cost-effective, so a lot of that recycling kind of dried up as well. Rachel, what angles did you want to hit on this?
To your point about China's kind of stoppage of some of their recycling processes, Boise recently had to adopt a new recycling scheme. So I think only the plastics numbered 1 and 2. So if you look at the recycling symbol, there's usually a number inside that triangle. So only 1 and 2 are going to be accepted for regular recycling. And then we signed on to a pilot project, I think, centered in Salt Lake City, where they can take some more of the lower grade plastics and kind of try to convert it into a diesel fuel. I'm not sure how efficient that is, how cost effective that is. And there's a lot more work on the consumer's end. So now we have a separate orange bag that we put those plastics in and kind of place on top of our recycling bin. So there's definitely, anytime you put an obstacle for the consumer, it will reduce participation. So I found I've struggled with that, even though I care deeply about recycling and proper disposal of my plastic. So I can't imagine people who are kind of on the fence about recycling in the first place caring too much about bothering to separate out those plastics.
Yeah, and we have a pretty demonstrable impact of how that works in practice in the form of the country of Japan, because mm-hmm. within the OECD, they have one of the lowest recycling rates in the world. I think it's like 17% or something like that, you know, of if you're talking about the total volume of waste being recycled as opposed to going to other things or being landfilled or whatever. And it's one of the lower ones. And you know, there's many reasons why that could be, but one of the biggest reasons is they're like, oh, you have to separate every single thing at like the curbside point, as opposed to like the recycling center separating it or whatever. They're like, you got to put it in this colored bag on this day and blah, blah, blah. And like, I don't know for sure if that's why the recycling rate is low, but I can't help but think that it is a contributing factor there, is that people are like, I don't understand how any of this works, whatever. Now, there are also all these penalties for like not doing it the right way if you like just put the thing in the trash. So, you know, maybe they've counteracted that and maybe it's some other factor, but I have to suspect that that's got to be at least somewhat involved.
Yeah, exactly. And also I wanted to mention something that Nate touched on briefly, some of those more biodegradable plastics made from like starches. I know it's very stereotypical of Idaho, but we have been creating some plastics made out of potato starch here for like utensils and single use, I guess like takeout containers.
Classic.
Yes, exactly.
I've seen corn as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Corn and some other like starchy materials seem to be pretty popular. However, those only break down if they are in sustained temperatures of greater than 50 degrees Celsius, which I believe is about 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So if they do end up washed out into the river system and to the oceans are, for now, quite cool comparatively to the beaches where there's a lot of direct sunlight. So once they hit that water, they're not going to break down as readily, and then we're kind of stuck back at square one. So proper disposal of those utensils is very important as well, so they do get that heat exposure, that UV exposure, to actually start breaking down.
Yeah, I also want to touch on, and I think as I mentioned before, I just found an article about this Henderson Island, part of the Pitcairn Group in the South Pacific. 38 million pieces of plastic found on this uninhabited island, 18 tons. And you have like absurd pictures like hermit crabs using plastic like bottles or whatever as their homes. So that's sort of, you know, when we talk about the oceans, that's sort of the effect there. I think we also want to touch on the existence of microplastics in water supplies. So a recent study found 94.4% of tap water contained plastic fibers tested here in the U.S. It's been found, you know, in all across the world, basically. And, you know, in falling from the sky in things like beer, honey, sugar. So it seems like there's a ton of different effects of this. Recent study, WHO launches health review after microplastics found in 90% of bottled water, and twice the levels twice as high as those in tap water. So it's in the tap water, it's in the bottled water. And of course, the bottled water comes in plastic bottles. So where do those go? You know, it's a cycle. And yeah, I mean, that we are seeing a pretty significant, you know, issue here. And, you know, this is part of what happens when we have a society built on consumption and, you know, we're just, it's growth, growth, growth. And, you know, what happens with those things that don't degrade, you know, you have it's like styrofoam can last like thousands of years or whatever. And, you know, when it's burned, for example, it releases the styrene and benzene releases, they're toxic and carcinogenic, and it can affect respiratory system, nervous system, reproductive system. So, and that, you know, this is how people sometimes will be the only way they can heat themselves in certain countries. So that's very worrying. A lot of case examples of what people are trying to do to resist this. A lot of this is focused on the plastic bag issue. Of course, now, you know, you try to go to Whole Foods, they have the, you know, the bags that are reusable. Obviously, that's a good idea if, you know, if that's widely distributed and affordable. But there have been various different types of bans on plastic bags or levies. So, for example, in Ireland, there was the plastic bags that get caught in trees were referred to as witch's knickers for a long time. And in 2002, they started a 15 euro cent, you know, levy or tax. It's been upped now to 0.7 euro, so like 70 euro cents. And it's been pretty effective, actually, in terms of like there was like a 90% drop in 1 year. And, you know, it has to be accompanied with like an awareness campaign and all of this other stuff. But, you know, it sort of varies country by country. They only have data on half the countries. South Africa, plastic bags are a new national flower. And there was a 2003 ban and a levy on retailers, but there was relatively poor awareness and lack of affordable alternatives. And eventually people just budgeted around those, you know, those taxes, and it bag usage returned to pre-levy levels. So, you know, if you don't have an effective way of carrying food or other different goods without, you know, getting rid of these plastic bags, then sort of what do you do? Like, it's not everyone can just go to the Whole Foods and, you know, get their, you know, whatever microfiber, whatever thing. I mean, that's what I use generally, but that's not really an effective alternative for everyone. So yeah, I mean, it does kind of seem like there's some serious issues. Bill, you mentioned that China, yeah, just 2018, they banned import of plastic scraps. There have been some provincial level initiatives, I believe in Jilin Province, they're trying to do corn-based biodegradables. You know, I've definitely been to, you know, sort of like, you know, eco-friendly restaurants or whatever. I say like, oh, our forks are made from corn or whatever. So I mean, that sort of has to be way more widespread than it is right now, because there's a lot of these single-use plastics going out into the environment every day, every second. So, yeah.
Rachel?
Yes. I have noticed that more restaurants are kind of adopting a paper straw as an alternative to their plastic straws. I haven't tried one myself, but that's what straws used to be made out of. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of catches on. Also, I think we've kind of gone away from the message of the 80s that reduce, reuse, and recycle. That reduction is a huge element. If we're not using these plastics to begin with, then there's no waste to dispose of. I think that definitely needs to be emphasized more. And I think in all of this, we have to mention that it's industry that is driving this consumption of plastic a lot more. I think we kind of harp on individual choice, but that's only a small component. It's industry using these plastics as well. And as a scientist, I'm very, very guilty of this. I do a lot of usage of petri dishes are plastic, pipette tips are plastic, I do molecular biology.
But you're pretty limited, like the same way as a consumer is limited. Your individual choices, there's not that much you can do, and you're not going to personally save the planet. A lot of that's going to have to come from more of a systemic change. Just like we've talked about in the past, how the carbon dioxide emissions, 70% of the emissions come from 100 companies or something. Mm-hmm. It's obviously not really the responsibility of the individuals to change their behavior. It's the responsibility of governments to pressure and regulate corporations to make huge system-wide changes that will actually reduce the usage.
Yeah, and in science, there aren't those alternatives yet. So it'll be interesting to see what we can come up with in the future. Because I generate a lot of plastic waste at work every day, and that is definitely something that is on my mind a lot. But it, as someone who needs to keep a sterile environment and not have random DNA contaminating my samples, I don't know what the alternative is yet, because reusing things is very very unreliable to try to get rid of all the nucleic acids that's on the surfaces of things without disposing of them. So it'll be interesting to see what alternatives we can maybe come up with in the future to reduce that waste.
One thing I do think is interesting is sort of the cultural effect, where you sort of have to normalize it and sort of normalize not consuming excess plastics. And there are some examples of such where, I believe in Aruba, there was a ban that went into effect January 1st, 2017. And, there was some initial reluctance, but there was educational programs, things like that, to the point where now people are using social media to report on ban evader. So if they see this grocery store or whatever has plastic bags, sort of post about it on Twitter or wherever else. And eventually it's reached situations where I think it's become more easier to use, say, empty boxes to carry out food. So instead of throwing those out or trying to recycle those, actually you recycle them by giving them to the customer so they can take home their food. So, I think that's a situation where you sort of have to change the culture of the country. I think in Ireland, this was also noted, where it's, eventually people just started thinking more. It's okay, we should just actually care about not seeing plastic bags. Because whenever you go somewhere like a park and you see just tons of trash and plastic everywhere, sort of lessens the enjoyment of that, public space. Or, if you're at the beach and instead of pristine sand where you can lay out, there's just trash, it's not nearly the same enjoyment factor. So, I think that's part of it as well. When you're worried about having microplastics in your seafood, your fish, or whatever, that's a huge part of it as well, I think. So, I think it really needs to be part of a culture change and really start thinking seriously about consumption. And unfortunately, that, might not happen for everyone. And as you mentioned, Bill, it's not this is purely individual. There's obviously huge you know, economic factors as well. So yeah, that's part of the concern as well. So, you know, you sort of have to do whatever you can that's feasible in your everyday life, but then at the same time, advocate for pretty serious, you know, structural change. And yeah, so I believe, just mentioning about the fish, last August, there was a Plymouth University study in England that found that plastic was found in a third of all UK caught fish. And they're trying to lobby to create plastic-free aisles. Apparently, there's a campaign group called the A Plastic Planet documentary, A Plastic Ocean, that was released. This is just from The Guardian, I believe, February 2017. So it seems like there's growing awareness on this issue, but at the same time, there's already so much plastic in the environment that it kind of seems like it, in some respects, it's already too late. So that's what we're dealing with right now. Yeah.
Rachel, your final thoughts?
In talking about kind of changing the culture, we also have to fight against bad laws as well. So I think Michigan and other states such as Idaho, Arizona, and Missouri have bans on banning disposable plastics, allegedly in an attempt to protect the industry. I know in Idaho, the legislator who introduced the bill, I think his wife was an executive in a plastic packaging industry. So we definitely have to root out some of those bad policies as well that are protecting this plastic industry and creating this this barrier to fighting the problem.
Yeah, and you know, we're seeing this everywhere. I'm just, you know, as we're going through this, I'm just looking at various articles and discovering even more and more sort of dismaying stuff, including extraordinary levels of pollutants found 10 kilometers deep in Marianas Trench, which is the deepest part of the ocean. And so they're getting all the way down there. Apparently, it's 50 times more toxic chemicals than were found in some of these crustaceans compared to even crabs that survive in heavily polluted rivers in China. So there are these like persistent organic pollutants that sort of sink to the deep of the sea and affect the life down there. So it's on uncharted islands. It's on, you know, it's in the Marianas Trench. It's everywhere. And we, I mean, this is probably needs to be a pretty key issue moving forwards. Otherwise, we're just going to be drowned in this, basically. So, yeah.
All right, Nate, thanks for being in studio here to spotlight this important issue in this report from the United Nations.
Thanks, Bill.
And Rachel, thanks for being on the line to talk about this.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFD Radio or email AFDradio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Tuesdays. You can hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Tuesday at noon Eastern. Our theme music was composed for us by Stuntbird. If there are articles or papers discussed in an episode, we usually post links to them on ArsenalForDemocracy.com along with each episode. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message.